This podcast is brought to you by Shift Management's Supervisory Leadership Certificate course, where online learning and live web coaching bring out the best in frontline and middle managers. Move from operations to management thinking to develop the skills for leadership and to reach your company goals. This course is for you if you want to learn the principles and strategies of effective supervision using real industry examples, and if you want to improve your communication and conflict resolution skills for your diverse workforce. Success in the course comes from increased self-awareness, setting micro goals, applying content to your context, and interacting with a company of community learners. Typical return on investment is 3-to-1, with reductions in waste, errors, rework, and complaints, while at the same time seeing increases in efficiencies, engagement, and customer satisfaction. A learning workplace is a profitable one, but only if you choose training that is targeted and has visible results. Make sure your training dollars are an investment, not an expense. Check out our Supervisory Leadership Certificate course, look at the information, and decide if this is right for you now. Go to supervisoryleadership.co. That's supervisoryleadership.co.
Welcome to another episode of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. Today, my guest is Carla Briones. So Carla Briones is a business owner, and she's a serial entrepreneur, and she also supports immigrants who are entrepreneurs in their entrepreneurship journey. And I first discovered Carla by listening to her podcast. I fell in love with it and with the people she interviewed, who are wonderful, and with Carla herself. She's a great interviewer. And I thought, I must interview Carla. So this is a little bit that I know about her. She's a Mexican-Canadian serial entrepreneur with a passion for helping others succeed in their business journey. She has used her own 10-year business experience to mentor, coach, and help new immigrants become successful entrepreneurs in their adopted country. She is honored to be a part of the team of independent business advisors at Invest Ottawa, where she provides strategy services to local aspiring and current entrepreneurs. In 2018, the City of Ottawa recognized Carla's contributions in the local economy and entrepreneurship ecosystem with the Newcomer Entrepreneur of the Year Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And she actively gives back to her community and volunteers as a mentor with Futurepreneur Canada, World Skills, and other local community groups. Her motto is, when you become a leader, success is all about growing others. So welcome, Carla.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm really honored that you can be a part of this podcast. And so I'm going to get started right away with asking you to tell the audience a little bit more about who you are. Tell us a bit about your journey and maybe a little bit about your immigrant journey too.
Yeah. So I am from Mexico, as you said so in my introduction. I was born in, I'm from the north of Mexico, so it borders with Texas. And I came to Canada after I finished high school. So I was 18, and my parents and I load up a U-Haul and sold all our possessions and brought the little things that we had left, and we made the trek through the United States and into Canada. And the reason why we did that, or actually it was my parents' decisions, obviously, because I was only 18, I was a young adult. And the reason that they decided to do that was because it was back then when the situation in the drug cartels and all that was just starting to boom. And it wasn't a safe place, and there weren't a lot of opportunities as an 18-year-old woman in the north of Mexico to basically remain alive, unfortunately. It sounds very dramatic, but the situation was very dangerous, and my parents wanted to give my brothers, I have two older brothers, my brothers and I, a better future, and I am forever indebted for them because they actually had their own business. My dad's a veterinarian doctor, and he had his own practice that he franchised. So he was a franchisor. So he developed this franchise of veterinary clinics, and then he sold his system. So he was a pretty successful entrepreneur down there. And then all of a sudden, for the hopes of a better life for us, he decided to sell everything, uproot his family, and establish new roots in a completely foreign country that we knew very little about. So in a nutshell, that's my immigrant story. And I mean, as a young adult, it was easier for me to adapt to a new country, although it came with its difficulties, obviously. And my parents had a bit more of a harder time, obviously, because as a foreign trained professionals, both of them, my mom, a teacher, my dad, a veterinarian doctor, they were your typical immigrant story. You know, my dad started, he wasn't a cab driver, but he started selling gas contracts from door to door. And my mom was a cleaning lady in home. So that's how we started, you know, going from having a pretty comfortable life in Mexico, where my dad was an entrepreneur. And although we weren't rich by any means, we weren't lacking anything, to coming here and being nobody and starting from scratch. So it was your typical immigrant story. And eventually over time, my dad got his license, and eventually over time, he ended up opening his business. And then fast forward 13 years, a year and a half ago, I helped him sell his business. And then he realized that he had structured the business from the beginning completely wrong. And he made a lot of mistakes, and having to backtrack all of those mistakes cost a lot of money and time and put his retirement in jeopardy. And that's when I realized, had there been someone there with us helping us every step of the way on learning how to structure a business correctly, how to, you know, how to do all of those things that sometimes people can take for granted, the access of that information and the access of that help, it would have been a different story. And in between, you know, those 13 years, I ended up opening my own share of businesses. I studied journalism, but I practiced it maybe for 4 years. And then I ended up opening a global pet food, so pet stores. And then I have a restaurant as well. And I haven't recently sold my shares on an e-commerce site. And that moment when I saw my dad's face of disappointment of what he, the mistake that he made and how much all that was going to cost, and the ripple effect of all of that, that's when I realized I need to use the knowledge that I have and the networks that I have to help the next wave, so that I don't see that face again on somebody else's dad.
It is true that people who are born in a country take it for granted that everybody can easily access whatever they need to. Mm-hmm. If you're born there, you know what search terms to use, you know what organizations are there. If you ask the wrong person the first time, it only takes you two or three tries. It doesn't take you 20 tries to get to the right person. It's just so important to have someone to point you out into the direction of the system and how to work inside the system so that
exactly. And you know what? Because coming from a developing country myself, and most of my clients, I mean, all of my clients are newcomers, because that's the niche that I would say most of them, because I do have through Invest.org clients that are Canadians or born in Canada. But the clients that are from developing countries, and they don't know what they don't know. And when you come from a developing country, you're not used to the government helping you as much as the Canadian government helps. So you don't even realize that there are all of these resources available, all of these programs available, all of this help available for you, because first of all, you're running away from a corrupt governments that don't really have your best interests at heart. And you come here and you don't even fathom the idea of a government actually helping you. So yeah. It's a huge learning curve, and it's a positive learning curve for my clients, obviously, but a learning curve that it would probably go much slower if you didn't have somebody to take you by the hand and point you in the right direction. So you're right.
Right. There's two sides to that. I just finished doing some research on immigrant entrepreneurship in Canada.
Ooh.
Yeah, and some characteristics and demographics and things like that. And immigrant entrepreneurs mention very frequently that their startup funding and their startup resources were government or institutions that are supported by the government. So that, I think, is good, because that means people are accessing what's there. On the flip side, we've also had several refugees live with us, and many immigrants, and my children all married immigrants. So the flip side is that people can think that they don't have to make money in their business, because there's just this unlimited support that's there. That doesn't happen. I mean, I've found that in a number of the students that I teach too, where they think, well, you know, there should be just funding because I had funding to learn English, I had funding to do this, so there should be funding for my business, right? And I'm going, you have to actually make money in your business. You actually have to use it to bring money in. Nobody's
interested in
your business. So yeah.
Personally, I've never encountered that with my clients, but that's interesting. That it's almost the other spectrum, right? Yeah, that's so interesting.
So you have both sides. One is not learning how to have access and to access the things that actually are available to you. And then the other one is thinking that those things that you had access to are it, when that isn't it. That's only a springboard to get into the business.
Almost like a sense of entitlement, I guess, or well, not even entitlement. Just yeah, no, that I've never encountered that myself, or yeah. with my clients. But that's really interesting.
Could be because you're in Eastern Canada, right?
I don't know.
Maybe different in the West. Who knows?
I don't know.
All right. Well, let me go. Thank you for that introduction. It's very interesting about your family and what they went through, and I can certainly identify with all the things that you're saying. It feels like home to me as well. So let me ask you about your childhood. So what are a couple of incidents in your childhood growing up in Mexico that you think really shaped you? And the kind of, I mean, you are a leader in helping other people. You're a leader in business. You're a leader in immigrant entrepreneurship. So what things from your childhood influenced that development that you can think of, a couple of incidents?
So the first one is when I was six, I started my own business. And it was because my dad and my mom had promised my brothers and I a trip to Disney. So we lived in the border with Texas. So it would have been a very easy drive to, or well, easier drive to California. So they were like, if you guys get straight A's, we will reward you with a trip to Disney. So what did we do? We got all straight A's, right? So my dad's like, oh man, now I have to deliver. So he was, and as I mentioned, although we didn't lack anything in our upbringing, we weren't by any means rich, right? So my dad said, okay, so here's the thing. We can drive up and I'll take care of the cost of getting us into the theme parks and the hotel. But if you guys want to buy any toys or any souvenirs, you're on your own. And I mean, I'm 6 years old, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm on my own. Like, what does that mean? Well, you have to come up with money to pay for whatever souvenirs you want to pay. And I'm like, well, how am I going to do that? So he's like, here's the thing, my dad. It's like, I'll give you, I don't know, the equivalent of right now, maybe 10 bucks. I'll lend you, because it was a lend. I'll lend you $10. And then we can go to the market, to the candy market, and you can choose candy and maybe you can resell it and make a profit and then you can pay me back and I won't charge you interest. I'm like, all right, whatever. I was 6 years old. So we did just that. It was the first time ever that I handle money, like that I made. And it was so cool because I started with the neighborhood kids, right? I started selling candy to the neighborhood kids, and very quickly I paid my dad $10. And then I'm like, oh my God, well, I can buy more candy. So I started investing my own money and buying more candy. And then I expanded my emporium into my school backyard. And it got so big that actually my parents got a call from the school principal and demanded that I shut down my operations. Because the cafeteria lady was losing her mind that her candy sales were going down because mine were going up. So it was really like, I learned a lot with that experience, right? I learned that it doesn't matter how old you are, if there's a will, there's a way, especially if it has Mickey Mouse at the end. And it was a very cool learning experience that my parents gave me that, you know, that then no, like, I, yeah, they probably could have bought me that souvenir here and there. But my dad's like, no, we're, you know, teaching you a way of going after for what you want in a different way, like thinking outside of the box. And then the other learning was not giving up, because I got shut down, but then I realized that I could make a different type of business and earn money that wouldn't interfere with my competitors in my school backyard.
Maybe as a broker for dentists?
That would have been a good one, seriously. No, it was back in the 90s where, you know, the clothing paint was very popular, you know, that bubble paint that you would put on, that they could design on your, well, I started my own t-shirt making business and I sold my own t-shirts and then I moved into making bows, like hair bows, because they were all in style, you know, and my friends bought my hair bows and it just started. So I think that 6-year-old Carla back then, being shy at the beginning, trying to sell one candy to like the neighborhood kids, to being that Carla 6-year-old that got shut down by the school principal, it taught me a lot. It taught me a lot about going after what I need and then thinking outside of the box to when adversity comes and you're shut down, well, what other thing can I do to continue, you know, doing something that I love, which was business.
Yeah, and the confidence that you gained and the sales skills you learned And you became the go-to person, I'm sure. I'm sure people came to you for other things. Carla, the candy queen, probably knows how to solve this problem.
Oh, it was so much fun. I still remember those days. And I remember the candies that I used to sell. They were fun candies too. So it was all the candies that I loved, obviously. So it was easier for me to sell them because I love them. So it was
fun. This is a good metaphor for starting a business. Start something you love. Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, that matters to you, something that you can put yourself behind.
Absolutely.
And it's fun that you're enjoying doing, right?
And then it doesn't feel like work.
Right. Oh, that's a great one. So any other stories you'd like to share?
I think the other big one that shaped me, although it wasn't really childhood, it was my immigration story to Canada. I was 18, so I'm not really considered a child anymore, although in Mexico back then, if you were a girl, an 18-year-old girl, you were pretty much still a child. Just because in Mexico, particularly with women, at least back then in the 90s, that's when I grew up and when I was at that age, you grew up very sheltered and you were still very much considered a child. So I came to Canada and I was very naive and I was very sheltered and very protected. And I came here and all of a sudden, like, I'm hit with this country that is so liberal and I'm learning about all of these new things that I've never even talked about that were taboo in my country. And it taught me how to be very accepting of rapid change. But also, I think my background, my very moral or whatever, like it was a very Catholic upbringing. That was actually, although I renounced to all of that when I came here eventually, but having that moral compass at the beginning and being exposed to all of a sudden all of these new information and taboo stuff that I never talked about, that moral compass did help me eventually make the right decisions when it came to drugs, when it came to sex, when it came to all of these things that were really much a taboo that were never discussed in my upbringing. So I think that moral compass, without being too religious or too, not without leaning into any, you know, extreme, it definitely helped me make better decisions for myself personally.
Well, religion provides a moral framework and a community framework. Mm-hmm. From which you can spring forth into your life and which gives you something to go back to. You can say, well, wait a minute, should I do this or shouldn't I? Otherwise, you have nothing to go back to. You don't mm-hmm. even know where to look for should I or shouldn't I.
Exactly.
Why not?
And I think when I came to Canada, I renounced to all of the all religion, just because I think the upbringing in Mexico back then, at least in my experience, it was very almost fanatic. And then I came here and all of a sudden I'm seeing the other extreme, at least for me, it was the other extreme. So I kind of let go of that fanatism and I didn't hold on to anything. But over time, I've been feeling the need to reconnect with that, call it religion, call it spirituality, call it Mother Earth, call it whatever. I'm feeling the need of reconnecting with that moral compass that helped me back then make good decisions.
It's part of the core of who you are and part of your identity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's very, very interesting. And I think that immigration stories, when you come as a young adult, are just as profound as the things that you experience when you're a child. My father immigrated from Germany. He's currently 90 years old, and he immigrated when he was 20. He has Alzheimer's. He doesn't remember anything except from the time he immigrated to Canada. That's how profoundly the experience of immigrating marked him.
It is. It is. Absolutely. You almost feel like you're living two worlds. At least for me, I was living in two worlds at the same time, because I came with my family and I live with my family here in Canada when I was going in university. So it's very marked, right? Like it's a huge change as a young adult, but then you go after finishing school or work, you go back home and it's like with your family and you go back to Mexico. So you're here, but you're not here. It's like you're living in limbo.
Yeah. So many people describe it that way. They feel that they've kind of lost their identity or lost their cultural roots, but then they don't belong here. And then basically, well, a lot of things have been written about that, the third culture, which is mm-hmm. a culture of people who have immigrated, people who have been displaced, and people who have traveled a lot in their lives so that they have a sense that they belong to the world, but they don't really feel rooted.
I can identify with that.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but back then for sure.
yeah, at the time. So from the groups that you were born into, you started to talk about them already quite a bit. What would you say influenced you as a person and as a leader?
What do you mean groups?
So what I mean by groups is people are born into groups. You're born into Mexico. You're born into the north of Mexico. You're born into whatever city or town or region that you were in. You're born into a language group. You're born into a religious group. Mm-hmm. You're born as a woman. You're born into a certain age group, right? Mm-hmm. And you were born into an entrepreneurial family, right? And then you also have your extent, your long lineage family. Like, those are just some of the things that you were born into. Mm-hmm. What influenced you from those groups?
That's a great question. I mean, I was born in a very goal-oriented environment. Even though I was a woman, and yes, I live in the part of Mexico where women were pretty sheltered and whatnot. My mom was always and has always been a very strong woman. So within that group, we were sort of like the rebels in that group, because my mom worked and my mom was an equal contributor to the family's finances. My mom traveled. So I think I grew up in an environment where, even though the norm was for the woman to kind of stay in the marriage and do that, I didn't live that in my small little family unit. And they always encouraged, you know, you can do whatever you set your mind to do. So that's why staying in Mexico was not really a good option for my parents, to give me and the rest and my brothers, obviously, but particularly me, a better life, because they knew that they wanted me to do better and to really grow into the potential that they saw back then. And they saw that the part of Mexico that we were living in would have been very limiting for that. So that's why the immigration.
Your parents had this vision of a human potential that was not gender restricted. They understood that women and men both need equal opportunities to contribute to society, to be economically independent, to have an education, to have a life. And they wanted to make sure that their children, their boys and their girls had that opportunity, right?
Absolutely. So definitely that influenced me quite a lot. And now I am the mom of two girls, feisty, amazing little girls, an 11-year-old and an almost 7-year-old. And obviously, I mean, living in this country is very different. It's free, and you can speak your mind, and nobody's going to censor you, and you're not going to live the limitations that existed back then in Mexico. So I want them to have even more opportunities than I had, and now they have their own business too, and I'm kind of repeating the same story, because one day they were bored, and it was raining, and it was a Saturday night, and they're like, "Mommy, I'm bored," and you don't tell mommy those words. So I'm like, "All right, you're bored." And they're really good bakers. My oldest daughter has this amazing ability to whip up a baking recipe just by she can test the batter. Like, I don't know, like, to me that's like sorcery. Like, I don't know how to bake to begin with, but it comes very natural to her. And I'm like, "Well, why don't you guys make a vegan cookie?" So she whipped out a recipe for a vegan cookie with her dad, or with my husband. And in that evening, they developed this awesome, chewy, perfectly amazing tasting vegan chocolate chip cookie.
I want one right now.
I know, they're awesome. And I'm not saying that just because I'm their mom. And I'm like, "Why don't you guys go sell them?" Because they were like, "Okay, well, we finished the batch, now what?" I'm like, "Well, now go sell them." And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah. Go sell them to the neighbors." My mom, "It's raining." "Well, then put on a raincoat and here's your Tupperware and just sell them." "Well, how much?" And they got all excited about it. And like, they went through their neighborhood, and I think it took them like maybe 10 minutes, and they came out with an empty Tupperware. And I'm like, "Mom, we need to make another batch." And then they made another batch, and they sold out the next batch. And then we started brainstorming name ideas for their business. And they're the Spoon Liquors Vegan Bakery now. And I swear to God.
Wait a minute. If they're licking the spoon, I'm not sure I want one of those.
It's at the end. They lick the spoon at the end. Don't worry. Because they do lick the spoons, but it's after.
Okay.
But now that business, I kid you not, it's going to put them through university. And anytime they want something, and right now what they all both want, they want a tablet, or they want, you know, like an iPad or something. And yeah, I could easily get it for them, but I'm like, no, you want one, go sell, you know, go get another catering contract, because they're actually getting catering contracts, and go get another catering contract, and then we'll put money aside, or you'll start saving for your own iPad. You can definitely get yourself your own iPad if you use this as your way of getting there.
Wow, so that's great.
So yeah, so belonging to all of these groups and all of these, they definitely have shaped me into who I am, and now I'm hopefully helping my kids as well.
Yeah, so your family influence about, you know, just making sure that you understand the value of making money, and if you have a need, how do you fulfill it yourself instead of saying, oh, somebody should help me with this. So yeah. Really, like, really great. Really, that's part of your moral compass in a way.
It is. And you know what? I think it's very common in, I'm not sure, I mean, I'm speaking for Mexico mostly, because in Mexico, even now, it's very hard to survive as an employed person, because the safety of that pension is not there. The safety of a stable economy is not there. The safety of a stable government is not there. So everyone I know in Mexico has a job, has a business, and it's a side gig, right? Like, it's, they're hustlers. They hustle, because if they want to live, you know, a comfortable life, or if they want to be able to put food on the table, they don't rely on a potential employment, because sometimes that employment may not even exist.
Right. So that's really great. So then there are also groups that you chose to belong to, or then you immigrated into as well. I mean, Canadians and some aspects of Canadian culture must have affected you. Mm-hmm. And depending where you are in Canada, there's always a region that has an influence and a way of doing things. And I'm sure there have been other things that you have joined or become a part of. It can even be a hobby. For example, I know a man who is almost 90 years. In fact, he is 90 years old, and he is a karate master. He joined karate when he was 15. Karate has shaped him. Well, he's in excellent shape for one thing, but I mean, that's something he chose to belong to, and it's mm-hmm. really affected the way he approaches life. So what about you? What things have you joined or become a part of?
Yeah. So one thing I didn't mention from my childhood is that I was a semi-professional ballet dancer in Mexico growing up from the age of 3 until I came here, and I busted my knee, obviously. And I was a classical dancer. So there was a lot of body movement, just, it was part of my being, and it was very strict, and there was a lot of discipline. So I learned to be very disciplined and going after a goal, also because of my very strong ballet background. So when I came here with a busted knee, I tried to look for the same here, but physically I couldn't do it. And it wasn't until maybe about 5 years ago that I had almost like a burnout, unfortunately, that I remained still. So it was like a mental burnout from like working and having too many businesses and too much staff and whatnot. There was a burnout, and then all of a sudden I am still, and my brain is going at 1,000 miles an hour, and but my body has, like, it's going 1,000 miles, but I know that I need to slow it down, but my body, like, I have this need to move my body. And I found yoga, and I never, you know, I've heard of the yoga, but I've actually never done the yoga. And 5 years I stumble upon yoga, and it's been amazing. And the community in that I belong to, like my yoga community, is amazing. And I started yoga just as a way to move my body, but then it became more than just that. It became almost like a spiritual thing as well. And it may sound very woo-woo,
it is. I mean, yoga is a spiritual practice.
Yeah, but the group and the community that is in that group that I relate to is amazing, and so nurturing, and so uplifting, and very understanding, and very empathetic as well, regardless of what you do, where you come from, so on and so forth. Like, it's because what unifies us is the love for yoga. So that's been very very positive in my adult life. And then another group that I belong to is, I belong to a couple of entrepreneurship organizations, such as EO, so it's called Entrepreneurs Organization. And then the other one is Tech Canada. So it's just basically like mastermind groups of like-minded business people. And we, it's really cool because we, it's not networking. It's more of sharing best practices and sharing ideas to help each other go to the next level of business.
Masterminding, right?
So it's like peer groups. So it's peer-to-peer learning. Mm-hmm. And those groups, again, I've been part of those groups for 4 years now. And they've been paramount for my development as a, not only as a business person, actually as a business person, obviously, but as a human being. Mm-hmm. Because being an entrepreneur is so isolating, because you're always thinking about business, and especially if you're a mom, because you put your business hat on and then you take it off and then you put your mom hat on and then that's it, that's your life. So it can be very isolating. So just being in contact with other people that are fighting the same fight and that are in there, and then you start hearing their stories and you're like, oh my God, I thought I was alone in this. Or, oh my God, I felt that. I totally get what you're feeling when you're feeling this way. And I thought it was just me. So personally, I found it very cathartic to be in a group. I mean, it's super exciting because we all get like ridiculously excited about business and growth and all this. But I think the biggest wins for me, at least in those meetings, is when we can all get very vulnerable and also talk about what's going on in our personal lives and also talk about what's going on in our health or talk about our relationship and our ups and our downs. Because at the end of the day, if one thing is not balanced, the other things are, it's a ripple effect, right? So if your health is not well, well, your, guess what? Your business is not going to do that great. If your relationship is, you know, it's not healthy, well, your health might not, like, you know, your health might not be healthy, or your mental health might not be healthy, and the ripple effect is that your business health is probably going to suffer as well. So it's been really cool as a person being able to explore the vulnerability side and the power that being vulnerable really is, as opposed to being vulnerable is weak.
Yeah, because there's strength in vulnerability. Rumi, famous mm-hmm. poet from Persia, and he has this long poem about being vulnerable and saying that, you know, if you wish to access your true strength, I'm paraphrasing it because he says it so much more beautifully, but, you know, if you wish to access your true strength, then when things are not going well, sit in the marketplace and weep and mm-hmm. publicly weep.
Yes.
And use your weakness as your strength, you know, and what you need to do to move forward will come to you. But if you do not use the power of weakness, you won't.
Absolutely. And I think as an immigrant, it's really hard because you're so worried of surviving. You're on survival.
You're worried about losing face and looking stupid.
Exactly. So, and you're so worried about all of these things that you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable. And now if you're an immigrant entrepreneur, it's even worse, because as an entrepreneur, man, you're like, You always have to show that you're on top of the game. You have to show this like bravado persona. So you deny yourself even that much more vulnerability. So as an immigrant entrepreneur who doesn't have that vulnerability, muscle, flexibility, it's very scary at the beginning being surrounded by a group of other entrepreneurs who are so easily come into their vulnerability. But, and at the beginning, it's a shock, or at least for me, it was a shock. But then the more I started to, if I see her, I can be her, right? Like other fellow entrepreneurs. If I see him and he's crying because his relationship is not going well and that's affecting everything else in his business, if he's doing that, what's stopping me from doing that as well and being okay with that and growing from that? So belonging to a group of not only powerful business people, but powerful and vulnerable business people has been, you know, like a mind blow, and it's been amazing.
You know, the last entrepreneurship class that I was teaching, there was an entrepreneur, software entrepreneur, very accomplished in his industry, and also came to Canada with a job, a high level job, so really very capable. And he was starting this business, and he, you know, we were talking about beliefs that stop you, And, you know, how do you know if something is not working? It's because you keep running into the same problem over and over again. So it's got to be rooted in some belief that's stopping you. So this was just, this is just part. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in the course, but this part. And he suddenly said, you know, so in front of the class with everybody else, and he's, you know, strong, handsome, very good looking, tall man, you know, from an Arabic country, and not, you wouldn't expect he would do something. Mm-hmm. I have the black sheep in my family. All my family, they own manufacturing plants, they own this, they own that, and I'm the only one who never makes money at my business. My businesses are always a complete failure. And he just burst out into like tears, and the whole class was like rallying around him. He said, how can we support you? What can we do to help you? I have a connection for you. We're going to show your family that you're no black sheep. You're part of the whole family. And nobody would have expected that to be him, because he was probably considered to be the most, you know, brilliant and capable mm-hmm. person in the room. And yet he was the one who was willing to say how frustrated he was with having this repeated pattern that kept coming up. It was really special.
Oh, but my God. But the teaching, or like the lesson, the life lesson that he probably, without wanting to, taught everybody else there. Oof, that's so powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. And he also realized he had friends and supports that he didn't even know were there. Exactly. So it was great. So let me get to this, the next one, because these are such interesting stories. That's the next question that I had was your temperament. What would you say is, like, people go, oh yeah, that's Carla. She's like been like that since she was a baby. what would that be for you?
Firecracker. I am, what was I born with? I was born very passionate. Like, anything I do, it's just like, you know, for me, it's like, I have this passion that sometimes I thought it was ADHD or something, or it was like, but no, this is just who I am. Everything I do it with passion. And sometimes I don't even know how I'm going to do it, but I just feel it that I'm going to do it. And then I just go, and then passion is infectious. But what I've learned as I've matured as a person and as an entrepreneur is to back up that passion with strategy.
And that would be the personality part that came in later.
Exactly. So passion is definitely something that I guess it's something that I have in me. It's just joie de vivre, and everything I do is I live every day as if it was my last day, and I try to make sure that I don't have any, I mean, we all have regrets, but I do everything, and I wouldn't even call it intention, because sometimes I do it intentionally, but I do everything, I do what feels good. And I go all out.
Mm-hmm. You give 100%, really.
Yeah.
Go for it. You see something you really, really want to do, you really believe in, and you just go for it.
Yes, I
focused do. And also dedicated, and also keeping the enthusiasm up straight. Mm-hmm. Not like, no, just quick start and dropping, like keeping on going, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a tough one, the keeping on going, because as an entrepreneur, we can have like the shiny object syndrome, where we just go wherever the shiniest object is. And that's where the strategy, the learned behavior came later, is that, yeah, I have that passion, but how am I going to sustain that passion, and what's going to be the strategy behind that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
great. So can you think of a time when, I mean, there must have been quite a few. I'm thinking you grew up in a community where your parents were kind of a little bit the outliers in the way that they encouraged you to move forward. And then you came to Canada, and I'm sure you had many, many other experiences when you experienced kind of a cultural disconnect. You went, that's the way I've always done things. I thought everybody else did the same thing, and now I realize it's not the same.
Mm-hmm. So it would be, it's a really good question.
Like, it's a culture shock experience. I'm just thinking of one right now. I was an adult, and I had a friend who was from the United States, and she was black, and she was from the United States, and we were very good friends. We were going together on a trip somewhere, and we were talking about our favorite children's stories when we were growing up. And I told her that my favorite one when I was growing up was Little Black Sambo. And she looked at me with horror, and she said, that is the most racist children's story that was ever written. I said, and I was completely devastated. I said, it is. And I was like, how could that be? You know, like, and I said, tell me how it's racist so I could erase all of that from my life, right?
Okay, no,
I actually had missed the whole thing, and I thought, this is how people grow up with racism and they don't even know it. And I was just devastated by that. And I said, how can I make it up to you? And she just laughed. She said, you haven't hurt me with it. It was just a little aha moment for you. She said, let me tell you about my story. Maybe you'll give me an aha moment for me. Like, so it was really interesting, but I was crushed that I had thought this story that was a story about pancakes and was actually a racist story.
So, yeah. No, for me, I guess the biggest one was because with my passion and enthusiasm, and when I'm having a conversation, or at least in the past, I'm way more conscious about it now. But initially going, starting as an entrepreneur, actually up until maybe about 6 years ago, I get so excited when people are excited. So they're telling me their idea about entrepreneurship, or they're telling me their idea about whatever idea, they get excited. And I get so excited about it. And I get so excited that I, like, my mind starts racing. And then all of a sudden I have like all of these ideas that are popping up I genuinely want to help, right? Like, or I'm excited about it and I want to say something. And in Mexico, it's very common to be like this, like to get excited. And then you start interrupting, right? But you're not interrupting out of malice. Like, you're just so freaking excited that you're like, you're cutting them half sentence, and you're telling them your idea because you're truly engaged. And it wasn't until about 6 years ago, because this was my MO, right? That somebody said, wow, you are really rude. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm rude? It's like, well, you just keep interrupting. And I'm like, oh my God. It never occurred to me that there would be people that would feel taken aback by me. I was interrupting them mid-sentence, but I was just so excited with what they were saying that I just wanted to give them my feedback. And then it was like, no, it's like that's very rude. Like, normally you wait until the person finishes their thought in their sentence and then you weigh in. And I'm like, okay, I have to refrain myself a little bit, and please trust me that I'm not doing it intentionally. Like, my interruption and my interjections are because I am so engaged in the conversation, and I'm feeling the passion and I'm feeling the energy that is just, it's just like my ideas can't wait to come out.
Well, you know, there's your personality in that for sure, and your temperament, but it's also cultural speech patterns, right? So there's a cultural speech pattern where people speak and they wait, and then the other people speak and then they wait. And then there's a cultural speech pattern where people speak and the other people speak on top and speak on top and speak on top.
Oh yeah, totally Mexican. That's Mexican. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of Hispanic cultures are like that. And Italians are really like that. Everyone's screaming at each other at the time. You catch little pieces of what everybody says, and they're all real excited about it. Nobody's insulting or rude. But if someone from the outside thinks that they hate each other, when in fact they don't.
That's just, yeah.
That's, and if you take it to, for example, one of the Asian cultures, maybe Chinese, although not as much China, because modern China is different now, and First Nations cultures, people say something, and then the other person waits for a very long time, long time, say, absorb it and think about it. And then they say something, and then there's another wait. And so imagine those two cultures coming together. You've got this one, and then you've got this one. Everybody's insulted.
And it's so funny because I'm married to a Canadian who is very thoughtful and who he has to really think about what you tell him so that he can come up with the response and have like a very eloquent thought or train of thought. And usually he's bang up, but I'm like, come on, like, just answer, you know? So even in relationally, it's been like, I need to calm down a little bit, and he needs to,
needs to speed up. And after you've been married for another 10 or 20 years, you'll be a little calmer and he'll be a little faster and it'll be
yeah, just, well, it's been 17 years.
I know, but it takes 30 or 40 before you actually.
Okay, well, I have hope then.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, because that was a great example that you just gave. Let's say that you're in a position where somebody was going to hire you, and you could say to them, you know what, this is how you can work with me. So this is how I work best. I'm going to give you a few tips on what would be the best way to work with me. What would you tell them about me and how to work with you?
So I can work. Okay. So this is what I tell to my clients. I am not for everybody. I preface that with my clients. I believe in the power of vulnerability, especially if it's business related. I believe in the power of vulnerability, and I believe that vulnerability and business are very interconnected. And in order to, especially because of personal experience, and whoever I'm working with, if it's a coaching client or in consultancy, I'm very curious about not their personal life, but about what makes them think or act a certain way in business and how that is related with what they're going through personally presently. So that's been very successful for me, particularly with the immigrant population, because it's very related. But also with the general population. So I work one-on-one, and I am very sensible. That I always have problems with that word. I'm very sensitive with change in postures or the way they're talking about a subject, and I'm able to determine on whatever that change. Something caused that change, and there's something that we need to talk about, whether it is, and it doesn't necessarily have to be anything personal, but if they're working on strategy or we're working on doing a strategy session, and then, but I see certain postures that close them up or certain words that they kind of lower their voice on, I'm very interested in that, because that's going to determine how the strategy or the end goal is going to happen or, you know, so I kind of pick at that. So it's not for everybody, but anybody who is open to that type of coaching or that type of one-on-ones, usually are very happy with it. I usually like the personal approach a lot better, or I do as well the Zoom meetings and the Skypes and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like a yoga instructor, because you're paying attention to the person moving from one pose to the next, and the stages in between, wherever the resistance is, wherever it's not working, you go, okay, this is where we have to focus, right?
Exactly.
We need to relax into it, or this is where mm-hmm. you breathe.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way.
So really, in a way, it's kind of like that, but it's also like from you to selling candy to all of your neighborhood colleagues, which what they wanted and what mattered to them, and you guide them to the process of the sale pretty quickly and exactly. have them come back for more. So I mean, it's that understanding that process of how people actually move from A to B and beyond is I think a really special talent.
Yeah, and also, I mean, being strategic too, right? Like, and also the experience that I have in business and my connections and my network and whatnot, I'm very generous in sharing those. If the client only hires me for an hour, and we're able to come up with, you know, okay, this is a course of action in an hour, but even in that hour I can go above and beyond and say, you know what, I'm going to introduce you to this contact of mine that I know can get you to the next level faster, or can get you to where you want to go with this other type of help that I am not an expert in. I'm very generous, because I believe that those connections and those contacts, they don't serve me, they just stay in my LinkedIn account. So I consider myself generous in connecting people, because at the end of the day, it helps everybody.
Yeah. You play it forward mm-hmm. and it comes back to you in unexpected ways.
Absolutely.
So, is there anything you would like to promote?
Well, right now, interesting, actually, knowing and being very in tune with how I am physically and energetically, I am actually taking a break in August, and that's very planned, because I need to slow down. So I'm not doing a lot of consulting and coaching for the month of August, because I need to reconnect and I need to re-strategize and I need to spend time with my kids too. Actually, that is the main thing. I want to spend a really cool quality time with the kids with no interruptions. And then after that, I'm going to be back full swing with, the plan is to sell online courses as well for immigrant entrepreneurs that are not necessarily in the Ottawa area, but that can access my teachings online, and they can reach me in my website, which is carlabriones.com. So that's KARLABRIONES.com.
Perfect. And I will be putting all that information in the show notes for people to be able to reach out to.
Perfect.
I'm wondering if you would like to give some parting words of advice or anything you feel you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say yet.
I think what I keep telling everybody is never give up on your dream and always be very proud of where you're coming from. Because as an immigrant, you learned very quickly that if you don't have Canadian experience, all your experience in your country may not necessarily be very helpful, but it is. It is, and be very proud of it and wear it in your heart and absolutely 100% be so proud of your heritage, of your experience from back home, because even though you're receiving the message that if you don't have Canadian experience, it doesn't work, man, just own your experience and be proud of it, and own your heritage and be proud of it, and never give up on the dream, particularly, I mean, for any dream, but I speak for entrepreneurship dream. Don't give up on it. Just make sure that that passion is backed up with strategy.
Carla, you are so inspiring. I just want to go run a marathon after talking to you.
I'm not a runner, but let's do some yoga.
Yeah, well, with the busted knee, you can't go for running anymore, but yeah, but still, well, that's how you inspire people. I'm sure that everybody that works with you comes away so much more charged with energy also ways that they can move forward practically, because I think you probably bring both of those. So thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you so much for having me. This was so enjoyable.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Wow. What a powerful, energetic interview I just had with Carla Briones. This is a woman with a mission and a vibrancy that could command stones to get up and move. I really enjoyed my interview with Carla, hearing about her entrepreneurship journey, her experience selling candy to all the neighborhood kids at age 6, and her insights from immigrating to Canada and helping her father navigate the selling of his business here. We can all learn from Carla's optimism, passion, and love of life. I certainly have been inspired and electrified by Carla, and I'm certain you have been too. Thank you, loyal listeners of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast, for sharing and rating this show. You can send me a message at marie@shiftworkplace.com to offer opinions and suggestions for upcoming speakers, or go to Voxer and leave me a voice message. Find me there at MGERVA539. That's MGERVA539 on Voxer to leave a voice message. If you leave a message, you might find your comment on an upcoming podcast episode. Thanks for listening, and may culture and leadership insights continue to guide your day.